This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
I love it when baseball players, for at least a week, make me look like I know what I'm talking about. Yo, welcome back to another edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangewoods.com, and this is episode 38, another fantasy baseball-only episode of the Extra Bases Podcast. So I guess we can call this the second installment of the fantasy-centric Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. But it is episode 38. We are almost approaching 40. Pretty crazy. They fly by. I mean, it seems like I just started doing these a few weeks ago, and we're almost up to 40 of these bad boys. But yes, this is again going to be just a fantasy baseball-only podcast. I really enjoyed doing the first installment of this, which was, I believe, I recorded that late Sunday night, so it's been over a week since I recorded one. And we can start with just kind of a brief recap of some of the guys I talked about last week. I'm not going to go through all of them because some of them things haven't changed, or, you know, in the case of a guy like Chris Sale, I'm recording this at Tuesday just before noon. A guy like Chris Sale, he pitches tonight. A guy like Sonny Gray hasn't thrown again since he took a liner off of his ankle or calf or something like that. So there's not a lot more to add to some of these guys, but we do have some more data, some more thoughts on a couple of guys that I did mention throughout that podcast. And we'll start with Corey Kluber. And I actually included him in the headline of the podcast. I said to sell on Corey Kluber. And he and his start following that podcast got shelled by the Royals. And I saw a couple of people I follow on Twitter that are been doing fantasy baseball stuff for a long, 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 long time and have their own projection models and things like that. They brought up a good point in that Kluber in the past has had some slow starts in April, and then in May he's suddenly a great pitcher again. My counter to that is the Indians basically told us this offseason that they thought Corey Kluber was going to start to decline. Now, I don't think they anticipated the type of pitcher that we saw get pounded all over the yard by the Royals. But by putting him out there and on the trade market or the trade block, however you want to put it, and just like, you know, it's these people don't report these names by accident. You know, oftentimes it's to help generate some more trade discussion and things like that. So when a guy like Kluber's name pops up consistently as somebody that the Indians were looking to possibly deal, It's not a fluke. It's not made up. It's not like the Indians, that was false and the Indians weren't putting him out there, or at least contacting teams about him. So while Kluber has had slow starts in the past and has turned into a really great pitcher, we've never had an offseason where the Indians were basically foreshadowing what we've seen so far. And I still think that he's going to be a average to above average fantasy starting pitcher, I think. But I you're not going to get ace Corey Kluber this year, I think. And part of that's based on what I've seen in the numbers so far, although it's a very, very small sample size, I get that. But also part of it, too, is the going back to this offseason when the Indians tried to trade him. And even though that, you know, it's not like they're paying him massive dollars as it relates to some of these other big-time contracts for starting pitchers. So if you're still owning Kluber, I think that the positive side is he does still pitch in AL Central. Although he got pounded around by the Royals, they're not a great offense. The White Sox are not a great offense. The Tigers are not a great offense, although there's kind of some intriguing guys on Nico Goodrum. Jordy Mercer is hitting way more fly balls than he ever has before, and he's hitting the ball harder than he ever has before. So they have some intriguing guys on the team. Jamer Candelario, I probably butchered that last name. But they're probably not going to be a good offense. It's a shame Kluber couldn't face his own offense because they're in trouble right now without Francisco Lindor. And if Jose Ramirez doesn't hit, they're not going to score many runs. And the Twins are, you know, they beat around Jacob deGrom the other day. They probably have the best offense in that division, but it's not a lineup that's going to strike fear into you when you're rolling out one of your fantasy pitchers out there. So he does have that still working for him, but I would still say if you can sell, or if you want to hold, until he has one really good start and then sell him then, I just don't think you're going to get the return on the investment that you probably made when you drafted him, because I think he was going I'd have to go back and look at his average draft position, but he had to have been one of the first starting pitchers off the board. Definitely not in that Scherzer, DeGrom, Sale, Verlander, Cole group, but probably in that next tier with guys like Aaron Nola and things like that. So there are a lot of, you know, mid to mid upper tier starting pitchers that are really intriguing that, you know, could potentially make a move on and maybe take a chance on a guy like being a breakout guy, like a Jack Flaherty or somebody like that. So unfortunately, Kluber, if you own him, it's not looking too good, but there's still a lot of time. He still pitches in a weak division. You could still have an opportunity to make a move. As you know from the first Fantasy Baseball Extra Bases podcast, I'm a big Framil Reyes fan. I call him the Franimal, which I can't be the first person to have used that nickname. I'm pretty sure somebody on the internet used it somewhere. But all of his underlying metrics, you know, how hard he was hitting the ball, how much he was walking, his, you know, his swing rates, his chase rates, the expected batting average, expected slug, all those things said that this dude should have way, way, way better numbers than he does. And since we recorded that podcast, he's hit four homers. He hit another one last night, opposite field blast, in Petco at night. So you've got to hit that ball pretty good. And I think that he's still somewhere like he's either number five or number six or number four in expected slugging percentage among all players. So he's hitting the ball. He's barreling at an elite rate. He's driving the ball at an elite rate. He's putting it in the air, and he's walking more as well, and he's striking out less. So I'm still all on board the Framil Reyes breakout train. I think that the window is closing for you to try to acquire him if you want to, whether by trade. I was so happy that in one of my – I call it a dynasty league because you can keep guys for up to 5 years. I was so happy that I flipped Nick Pivetta for Framil. This is a league where pitching is more valued just because of the two-start weeks and all of those things like that. If you nail a two-start week, you can really put you ahead in the weekly points league. But I flipped Pivetta for Framil, and I'm so happy. I'm washing my hands of Nick Pivetta wherever I can. Speaking of him, he's got a two-start week this week, I believe, against the Mets and then at Coors. So, whew. His numbers could look even worse at the end of this week. And even if they looked better, I still would tell you, do not under any circumstances buy him. It's too much of a roller coaster and a headache to deal with. So Framil Reyes, I'm still all on board with that breakout. He's starting to get the results that all the batted ball numbers say. And, you know, he's hitting at the top of the lineup, too. I believe he hit second last night. It wouldn't surprise me to see him hit third, fourth some nights as well. Maybe against right-handers, they kind of move him down to five and six. But I think, I mean, the Padres are a very, very smart, progressive, forward-thinking organization. I mean, just look at how they've treated some of their young players like Paddock and Tatis Jr., bringing them up and saying, screw it to the service time. So they know, despite Reyes' low batting average and things like that, they know how well he's swinging the bat. They know that the positive numbers are coming. So I it looks like they are fully committed to making him an everyday guy, if not an everyday guy, enough of an everyday guy to where he's going to have value, whether it's roto leagues, head-to-head, whatever. And, you know, that outfield, too, can kind of have some injury issues. You know, Hunter Renfro has been swinging it pretty well. Will Myers, when he's healthy, has been swinging it pretty well. Manuel Margot has been actually swinging it pretty well as well. So they do have some quality options, but I just think that the way they treated Framil in spring training, the way they've treated him so far this year, the way he's swinging the bat this year, I think that he's going to be an everyday guy. Unfortunately, Freddy Peralta did not make me look intelligent by having a short outing against the Cardinals. It's weird. You look at his expected numbers and his barrel numbers and things like that, and they're all pretty solid. They all look like they're better than they were last year, but he's just giving up way too many home runs right now. And I think that it's probably a command thing. You know, too many fastballs in the middle of the plate or up in the middle of the plate that are getting hit. And it's like if you can neutralize his fly ball or his home runs for fly balls and just kind of normalize those, you'd have a really good starting pitcher, I think. He's actually striking out more guys and walking fewer guys this season than he did last season, but he's giving up an absurd 2.55 homers per nine innings. I mean, that is nutty. I think that he was at like 0.9 last year. So I think it's a command thing. And perhaps now that the teams have, you know, have a little bit of a scouting report on, they've seen him and things like that, perhaps it's a little easier to figure out. I mean, he generates so much value because he's a big-time extension guy. I mean, he's, despite not being a tall guy, he gets amazing extension on all of his stuff, but particularly his fastball. So it can make it play up and seem quicker than it is. So I'm still in on him. I think that it'd be an opportunity where if you've, you know, you want to take a chance on a cheap arm that's struggling, whether it's the waiver wire, whether it's a deep league and a potential trade or something like that, he would still be a candidate I look at. The NL Central, again, is a really tough division. You know, the Cubs, even though they've struggled some, are a good lineup. The Cardinals have proven that they can hammer the ball, especially against Peralta. So it's not going to be easy pitching in that division consistently. And even if you look at the NL East as well, there's some good teams and good lineups over there. So I would just definitely keep an eye on him, though. So let's get to some new guys. Again, you're listening to the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. This is episode 38 in our second installment of a fantasy baseball-only Extra Bases Podcast. And I'm going to get to a couple of big names. Chances are you probably own these guys, or you'd want to own these guys, or somebody in your league owns these guys, because if they're on the waiver wire, you'd need to go grab them immediately and start playing in a more difficult or larger fantasy baseball league. So JD Martinez is having a pretty good start to the year, even though my Red Sox have are driving me nuts and just not playing well at all. So entering today, hitting .344, .417, .563. That's really good. He's got three homers, nine RBI, nine runs scored. Here's a crazy thing about JD Martinez, though, is, and I know this from watching, I think I've watched every single Red Sox game except one. He's hammered the ball so many times to see like line drives caught in front of the green monster or caught in front of the center field wall or something like that. And you look at his Statcast statistics. His expected batting average is .388. His expected slugging is .795. .795. And his, you know, his weighted on base based on contact is .560. His expected weighted on base is .515. He's striking out way less than he did last year. He's at 9.7% for a K percentage, down from 22.5 last year, and his walk rate is about the same. He's at 10.6 last year. He's at 9.7, so not that dramatic of a difference there. It's fair to say that JD Martinez, a breakout is coming for a guy that's hitting .344 and slugging .563. Just the way he's barreling the ball right now and the way he's making contact, it's just a matter of time. So if you own him, do not let go of him. I would say under any circumstances, he's going to mash. The way he's swinging the bat right now is better than he swung it last season. His exit velocity is up from last season. His launch angle is up a little bit from last season. Hang on to JD Martinez. If somebody in your league is dangling him, I would say jump on all over that if you can. He's really, really, really swinging the bat well right now. And all of his numbers suggest that he could have a career best season if he continues this. I mean, he's in the 91st percentile in a hard hit percentage, 92nd in exit velocity, 99th in expected batting average, 98th in expected slugging, and 98th in expected weighted on base percentage. So he's going to have a monster year, and he should have much better numbers than he does right now, even though his numbers are really good. On the other side of the equation is Travis Shaw, who the Red Sox actually dealt to the Brewers a few years ago for Tyler Thornburg. Didn't prove to be a very good move by the Red Sox. Thornburg got hurt all the time, and Shaw has turned into a pretty solid everyday player and definitely a guy that's on fantasy radars. I see some concern with him, and it's not just some of the batted ball stuff. You know, he's never been a guy that's been a high batting average guy, although his expected batting average this year is .193, which is way lower than his career .243 mark. But he's been a slugging guy, and he's been an on-base guy. And both those numbers are way down. And there's, I think, the biggest cause for concern, well, there are a few of them. His K percentage is way up. He's at 32.3%, which last year he was at 18.3%. And that was an issue for him in Boston. And I think one of the reasons why Boston made the move that they did is he just looked like a high strikeout guy that didn't walk a ton. And then he got to Milwaukee, started striking out less, started walking more, became a better player. His exit velocity is literally almost the exact same it's been since 2015. His average is 88.4 miles per hour. This year is at 88.8. But he's not barreling the ball as much. His launch angle is a little bit down from where it was. But I think the most interesting thing about him is the way he's being pitched. Last year he got 58.7% fastballs, which is pretty much in line with his entire career, the way the guys have pitched him. This year it's down to 51.6%, while the breaking stuff is up to 34.5%, which is almost a 10% increase. So he's basically if you look at 2015 through 2018, he was basically pitched the exact same, almost identical breaking ball percentage is almost identical. Fastball percentage is almost identical. Off-speed percentages, which off-speed is like changeups, splitters, things like that. Mostly just changeups because not many guys throw splitters or screwballs or anything like that. So he's being pitched differently, and he hasn't responded very well to that. He's not hitting breaking balls well. He's hitting fastballs okay. But this is a guy that in the past would smash fastballs. I mean, last year he had an expected slugging of 524 against fastballs. Against breaking stuff, it was 340. So perhaps this is just a small sample size type thing, or maybe this is a trend in that teams are more often trying to attack him with breaking stuff as opposed to fastballs. I think that there's definitely some cause for concern there. He's not a guy that I would be targeting in any sort of trades or anything like that. If you have him, I would keep an eye on him and watch him closely. Maybe if he gets hot, maybe potentially look to making a move with him. The plus side for Shaw is that he hits in a really good lineup. I mean, Christian Yelich had 3 homers last night. Like, the guy is unbelievable. Lorenzo Cain is solid. Mike Moustakas has had a really good start to the year. They've got Jesus Aguilar. They got Eric Thames. I mean, they got some dudes in that lineup, so that's going to help. I mean, Shaw's going to have run scoring opportunities. He's going to have RBI opportunities and things like that. But I just, in watching him too, the at-bats haven't been very, very good. So I would keep an eye on him moving forward. A guy I liked a lot heading into this year, and I think I mentioned it on when I tossed in some fantasy baseball stuff occasionally on some previous episodes of the Extra Bases podcast, was Yoan Moncada. Yoan Moncada has always hammered the ball when he puts a bat on it. I mean, the ball flies off of his bat. Since he's been in the big leagues, he's hit the ball as hard as anybody. I mean, last year he was at 90.6 miles per hour in exit velocity, and when he hits the ball, it jumps. Well, the talent has always been there. The tools have always been there. You can see it. There's a reason this guy was an extremely hyped prospect. And there's a reason why the White Sox wanted him when they were dealing Chris Sale to the Red Sox. So the talent is definitely there. But the approach to me was always lacking. You know, he does have a good eye, but I would see him when I watched him last year, it just didn't seem like a very confident approach. He was too passive. He was trying to be too selective. Then he'd get himself into situations where the swing and miss opportunities would go up. But while this was happening, it was always clear that when he puts the bat on the ball, good things happen. You know, the ball just really, really jumps off his bat. And what's the best way to have good offensive numbers? Hit the ball as hard as you can, as consistently as you can. The harder you hit the baseball, the more often you hit the baseball hard, you're going to get rewarded eventually. It's not going to work. You might have times where, like a Framil Reyes, where the numbers don't reflect how well you're swinging it. Eventually, that stuff is going to even out. So with Moncada, this was a change that, you know, him and the White Sox did. You could see it in spring training. They really increased the aggressiveness. They really increased, I think they changed his hand placement a little bit, but really it was about swinging the bat. And I think that he's just a more dangerous hitter when he swings the bat. And that's what he's doing this year. And it's led to some terrific numbers. His exit velocity, 96.4%. That's incredible. That's 99th percentile in Major League Baseball. His barrel percentage, 17.4%, is top 8% in baseball. More importantly, his K percentage is down. Almost 10% is down from 33.4% to 24.2%. And although his walk percentage is down from 10.3 to 6.1, you can live with that because all the other numbers have made a dramatic increase. And it goes back to what I was talking about. When he hits the ball, good things happen. And what he's doing right now is his contact rates are up. His swing percentages are up. So on pitches in the strike zone last year, he was at 62.3% swinging the bat. He's at 69.5% this year, and he's making contact a little over 7% more. And while he's chasing a little bit more, he's up about almost 3% from last year in chase. You can live with that because the whiff percentage is down. As long as that whiff percentage stays down, the more he swings, the better I think he's going to be. And his total swing percentage is up almost 7% this year. So I think that this is the real Yoan Moncada. I think that we are starting to see why he was such a coveted big-time prospect. And remember, this guy's only 23 years old. So he's still a young guy as it relates to Major League Baseball. And all of his batted ball numbers are really, really good. He's also very, very fast. He's going to steal some bases. He's going to continue to drive the ball. He's been getting on base. So I think that this is definitely for real. If you own him, congrats. I think that you've found, you know, especially where he was going in draft, I think that you've potentially found a breakout guy that could really give you some good value on that return. And if you can target him in leagues, potentially, I think it's worth a gamble if you find somebody that's just not quite buying in on what he's done so far and kind of looks at his past numbers and things like that. So again, you're listening to the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. This is episode 38, and it is my second installment of an all fantasy baseball only podcast. So we just went through some big name bats on my list. Let's look at some big name arms as well. Some guys that you definitely own or somebody in your league owns. Zach Wheeler has been interesting. The numbers are not good so far. 7.47 ERA in 15.2 innings, whip of 1.72, 17 strikeouts and 15 2/3. Those are obviously not good. Well, I watched this last start against Atlanta, and really I think it's just a matter of throwing strikes, really. The walk rate has jumped up big time, but he's not missing by a whole lot. I think what could be attributing to some of those misses is that he's throwing his sinker way more. I mean, it's up almost 15% this year, and the four-seam is down dramatically. I mean, it's down from 42.6% down to 27.2%. So with a guy like Wheeler, and you see this when you watch him, he throws so hard and the ball moves so much that I think that he's trying to master how to command that two-seamer, because it's obviously easier to command a four-seamer than it is a two-seamer. If you're using a two-seamer from the way that you want to try to put it on certain sides of the plate and down in the zone, because you don't have to see guys that are throwing two-seamers way up in the zone. That's more of a four-seam pitch to get more of that spin rate and things like that. So he's throwing his two-seamer, we'll call it sinker more. The average velocity on that pitch is 97.3 miles per hour. So this thing is not only moving a lot, it is lively. And you can see when you watch him, he threw a pitch against Josh Donaldson. I actually got a hit. I think he got a hit on this pitch. Or I know he got a hit in the at-bat when I was watching it. He threw a pitch at Josh Donaldson that was 100.6 miles per hour in his last start. And I want to say it was a two-seamer, the way it was moving. So I think it's a matter of him harnessing his stuff. Maybe they look to kind of pulling back on the sinker usage a little bit and using more four-seam fastballs, especially when he's behind in the count, to try to get him to throw strikes. So I really just think it's a matter of commanding, controlling. His start at Atlanta, his last start, was a step in the right direction. But the stuff is awesome. I mean, he's throwing, you know, he's literally throwing over 100 miles an hour at times with a slider that has an average velocity of 92.2 miles per hour. And this is up. I mean, all his velocity numbers are up from last year. His four-seamer velocity is up, sinker velocity is up, slider velocity is up. Everything is up from last year. And all at the same time, the spin rates are pretty much the same. So hold on to Zach Wheeler. Don't panic. I do think that he's gonna turn it around. The whip might be a little cringeworthy this year, just because, you know, that's sometimes a guy like that with this kind of stuff and this kind of control record is gonna walk some guys and maybe have to throw the ball right down the middle of the plate to avoid walking guys. But the stuff is real. The strikeouts are gonna be real. I think the ERA is gonna come down soon. With Yu Darvish, he had a positive start last night. But really, who doesn't have a positive start when they're facing the Marlins? So I'm not really buying Darvish. I don't really see it with him. The expected numbers aren't bad, but the walk percentage is still 18.1, and the K percentage is still down. And I think more concerning would be that the velocity is down as well. 92.9 miles per hour average four-seam velocity, down from last year it was 94.1 miles per hour. The spin on that pitch is also down as well. Not dramatically, but it is down a little bit. You know, the slider spin and things like that are pretty much the same. Cutter spin is pretty much the same. But I think this is a guy that needs to win with velocity when it goes to his fastball, because he does need to get guys to chase and things like that. So I'm not buying you, Darvish. Not with the injury history, not with what we're seeing so far. And certainly not after one start against the Marlins, who are going to make a lot of pitchers look good this season. Jacob DeGrom, I think people like me, I have, I think, three shares of Jacob DeGrom. I targeted him as my SP1 for the year. I had him above Scherzer and I had him above Sale. I mean, I just watching him last year just do what he did. And the stuff, the repertoire, the strike throwing, all those things, I just think he was a surefire ace. Well, he has been bad. Four starts this year, 3.68 ERA, 22 innings pitched, 36 strikeouts. That's impressive. But the whip of 1.27, he's had a couple of just either bad or just okay starts. His pitch count got way up against the Braves on Sunday Night Baseball. He wasn't bad, but he just wasn't good. Well, I think it gets back to the breaking ball with him. I think that it's not quite been the pitch that both of them, really. The slider, he throws a lot more than the curveball, but he does include both. And the slider velocity's up from 91.1 miles per hour to 92.8 miles per hour. The curveball velocity is also up as well. I think it's just a feel thing with the breaking ball right now. I think that there's, you know, it's just a matter of getting a feel for that pitch again and using it in the way he needs to. The interesting thing about DeGrom is the strikeout percentage, I believe, is way up. Yeah, 32.2% last year. It's 39.1% this year. And the walk rate is 7.6. It was 5.5 last year. I'd like to see that below 7, the walk percentage. But you can live with 7.6%, especially when a guy is striking out guys at the rate DeGrom is right now. But his barrel rate is up, which I think gets back to the breaking ball. The X velocity is up a little bit. The launch angle is up a little bit. And I just think it's all about, you know, the breaking ball. He hasn't thrown many sinkers, and they've gotten tattooed when he's thrown them. I think he's only thrown 12 sinkers this year. Not really a big pitch, but really it's, you know, when you get back to looking at the slider and the curve, those have got to be more put-away type pitches for him. You know, people are hitting 333 against the slider right now and slugging 778. The numbers say that that's a bit unlucky, so don't freak about Jacob DeGrom. I think that once he gets his feel for his breaking stuff and commanding it better, he's going to turn into the monster that he was last year, and that the guy that you drafted maybe in the first round, definitely in the second round, and if somebody's looking to shop him and is just like panicking about four starts in a 3.68 ERA and a ton of strikeouts, jump all over that if you can. We'll wrap up this last section of the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com, episode 38, our second fantasy baseball only installment of the Extra Bases podcast. We'll wrap up this last section with what I've got labeled as deep cuts. some guys that to keep an eye on. Maybe you're in a deep league and you can target these guys on the waiver wire. Or, you know, I do think in the case of a couple of these guys, they could definitely jump onto not a 10-team radar, but definitely a 12-team radar where, you know, the waiver wire is a little thinner. 10-team leagues are just so tough because there's literally just good pitchers and hitters on the waiver wire every week. And it's like, I mean, come on. Like, you're like, how do you decide between all of these guys? And is it really, you know, a skill thing or whatever? You get into the 12-team leagues and it gets a little tougher. Definitely when you get to 14, it gets tougher as well. So one of these guys that I picked up recently in a couple of leagues, Hunter Dozier of the Kansas City Royals, hit another home run last night. A former first-round pick back in 2013. He's actually went to Stephen F. Austin in Texas, a Texas guy. Sometimes you see these first-round picks and they figure it out later in their career or way later than everybody expected them to figure it out. But these guys were first-round picks for some reason. So Hunter Dozier is hammering the baseball. 92nd percentile in exit velocity. He is 95th percentile in expected slugging, 86th percentile in expecting on batting average. I mean, this is a guy that's really hitting the baseball hard. His exit velocity is at 94.1 miles per hour, which is way up from what it was last season. And also, just as importantly, he's striking out less. His K percentage is down from 28.1 to 17.2%. And his walk percentage is up from 6.2 to 10.3%. And when I watch him, I really like the swing. I really like the approach. Go back and watch. He had a walk-off hit to beat the Indians. Brad Hand, who's one of the best relievers in baseball, he had a walk-off hit off Brad Hand and just was so calm in the box, so relaxed, kept his weight back, kept his hands back on a breaking ball, didn't try to do too much with it, and just smoked a liner to the wall to win the game. And I like this guy. I think that I don't think he's going to hit 300 all year, but I could see a guy that gets on base at a solid rate and definitely slugs at a good rate. I mean, he's already hit 4 homers this year. He's already scored 8 runs. He's slugging .580, and his expected slugging is .649. So the way he's hitting the ball says he should be even slugging. He should be slugging at an even higher rate than he does in his numbers. And his swing percentage numbers, he's being more selective, but more importantly, he's being selective and his contact rates are going up. He's swinging less on pitches in the zone, but his contact rate is up 10%, and he's chasing less. So this is a guy that is hitting the ball hard. He's swinging at the right pitches, and he's a guy that was a former first-round pick. So I picked him up already in a couple leagues. He's locked into everyday playing time with Kansas City. I can't remember the last time he didn't start. I'm looking at his game log right now. He's had 4 plate appearances or more. 3 plate appearances or more in every game that he's played this year. So he looks like an everyday guy with Kansas City. If you are a little reluctant to grab him in a 12-team league, I get it, but I would keep a very, very close eye on him. I definitely, if he's still around in a 14-team league or a bigger, I would jump all over him, especially in AL-only league. He's probably long gone in AL-only. But this is a guy, I think that this could be for real. 6'4", 220. I think the power is real. And so far, he looks like the real deal for a Kansas City team that I think is a little better offensively than people thought it was going to be. Especially me. I thought it was going to be Mondesi and Merrifield just kind of terrorizing teams when they can at the top of the lineup, but there wasn't going to be much punch. And Dozier's starting to provide some of that punch. A guy I thought would provide more punch last season was Colin Moran, who was one of the key pieces that the Pirates received when they dealt Gerrit Cole to the Astros. And Joe Musgrove was another one of those pieces, and he has a 0.00 ERA this year. I mean, he has been awesome. He's not going to do that all year, but I think that he's going to be a really solid SP2 in a rotation kind of guy. Not an ace, but I think if you look at some of those upper middle tiers of fantasy baseball pitchers, I think Musgrove is going to end up right there. But Moran, he reportedly made swing adjustments. He was starting to hit the ball in the air more. He was starting to hit the ball harder. I got another guy that was a first-round pick in the same draft as Dozier. He actually went two spots ahead of him when the Astros took him. And it just never really happened last year. He had some bright moments. You know, he didn't perform terribly, but it wasn't quite what I think the Pirates thought they're going to get. This season's been a different story so far. The launch angle is up from 10.5 degrees to 15.2 degrees. And when I say launch angle and why it's important is if you're hitting the ball in the air hard, you're going to get rewarded for it, whether it's extra base hits, whether it's home runs, whatever. And especially like a guy like Moran that doesn't run very well and doesn't swipe bags, you need a guy like that to hit the ball in the air and you need him to hit it hard. And that's what he's doing this year. His barrel percentage is way up. His exit velocity is up from 88 to 90. He's up from 88 miles per hour to 91.9 miles per hour. His expected slugging is 635, which is way up. His expected weighted on base is 425. All of these numbers are up. And while he's striking out more, he's also walking more and he's hitting the ball harder. I think you'll take that trade any day. As long as the guy is hitting the baseball hard, more frequently and more consistently when he does put the ball in play, I think you'll take the increased strikeout rate. So maybe this is what the Pirates thought they were going to get. And with Jung Ho Kang really struggling right now after winning the third base job in spring training, I think there's going to be a path for Moran to get a lot more playing time moving forward. You know, he started the last two games for the Pirates, and, you know, there's been some pretty good return. He had a double in that first start. A couple RBI. He's been 3-for-8 in those two starts. So I think that there's going to be more playing time to come for him. He's had some really clutch moments in pinch hit situations for the Pirates. One of his earlier starts this year, he hit a homer, walked twice, drove in three, and scored a run one of his few starts. So I think that more playing time is coming. I'm not as aggressive with him as I am Dozier because, again, playing time matters so much. You got to have a direct path to playing time to really make a fantasy impact. But I'm definitely watching him because obviously the Pirates thought highly enough of him to make him one of the few pieces in the return when they traded Gerrit Cole to Pittsburgh. So they thought that he was going to be their everyday third baseman. Maybe they'd have to sit him against lefties occasionally, but definitely a guy that's going to be in the lineup pretty regularly. So perhaps he's figuring it out a little bit more. Another guy that the Astros had and reluctantly had to give up was J.D. Davis. I mean, the Astros just didn't really have a spot for him. And, you know, the Mets snatched him up, and he has been killing the ball. I mean, just murdering the baseball. I mean, his exit velocity, 96th percentile. Expected batting average, 99th percentile. Expected slugging, 97th percentile. Hard hit percentage, 99%. I mean, this is really impressive what he's done. He's actually walking more than he strikes out. Now, I don't know if that's going to continue. It's probably unlikely. So is a 23.3% barrel percentage, which is just insane. I mean, he's put 30 balls in play, and 7 of them have been barrels. That's nuts. That's such a high rate. He's lifting the ball in the air more. His expected slugging is 743. Expecting batting average is 387. I mean, this is just insane what this guy is doing. And I know that the Mets have Todd Frazier, and he's apparently coming back at some point. So I'm not quite sure what's going to happen to J.D. Davis. Obviously, the Mets have a bit of a logjam at first base. Pete Alonso has been awesome. And when they've used Dominic Smith, he's been pretty solid as well. So first base is definitely occupied. So I'm not quite sure what they would do with Davis and then, you know, with a guy like Frazier. But he's killing the ball. You know, he hit a home run recently in the Sunday night game against the Braves. He hasn't stopped hammering the ball when he's in the lineup. So I would definitely keep an eye on him. Anytime you get a guy that is walking more than he strikes out, and then when he puts the ball in play, is just doing it in an elite way, that's definitely a guy that's worth following for sure. His whiff percentage and his swings is down as well. And I love the stat, meatball swing percentage. So basically, when you get that perfect pitch down the middle of the plate that you should hammer, how often do you swing at it? And he's done it every single time. So that tells me that this is a guy that's got a good approach. He's seen the ball well. You know, who knows how much or how often that's going to continue, but pitchers are pitching him the same that they have in the past. He's just performing at a higher level. So I would definitely keep an eye on him as well. Some of these other guys, I'm going to mention some minor leaguers that could be stash guys, especially in deeper leagues. Mike Soroka with the Braves made his debut last year and was really good before he had a shoulder issue. Well, so far in AAA, so good. He's been really good, actually, and I think he's been a candidate for a spot start with the Braves soon. So I know they just called up Tuki Toussaint, and Max Fried is throwing well, and they're about to get back Mike Fultonevich. But Soroka clearly was at the top of their chain for prospect arms last year. He's throwing the ball really well in AAA. Could be a potential stash opportunity because it's hard to find upside pitching right now. I was going through the guys for the deep cut section to list for pitching, and it's just like everybody snatches them up. I mean, it's really, really tough. Kevin Biggio, yes, if you recognize that last name, he is the son of Craig Biggio, the former longtime Houston Astro and Hall of Famer. You know, Kevin's in the Blue Jays system, which Bo Bichette and Vlad Guerrero Jr. get a lot of attention, and rightfully so, but I think that Biggio is going to be the first guy from that group to make the big leagues. He's older. He doesn't quite have a lot of AAA experience, but he's killing the ball, and he's also very versatile. He could play all over the infield. He could even play in the outfield some, I think. So I think it's just a matter of time before the Blue Jays give him a look, and that could be somebody worth stashing because if he gets up to the big leagues and does what he's been doing in AAA so far, he could turn into an everyday guy for an organization that really is in a clear rebuilding mode. Zach Gallen for the Miami Marlins had a really, really good spring training. His velocity was way up. He's been the definition of dominant in AAA so far. And I don't know if there's a direct path to him, for him starting in the Marlins right now, but I know Jose Arena's been really, really bad so far this year. So that just could be a matter of time before he gets a chance to get into the rotation and make some things happen. I would keep an eye on him as a potential stash guy. You're not going to find him on many prospect lists, but I think that's because it's a guy that reportedly used to throw 93, 94 miles an hour, and the spring was sometimes up to 97. I think the stuff is better, and so far the results have been a lot better as well. So those are some minor league guys you could potentially keep an eye on, maybe stash in those super deep leagues or especially those dynasty type leagues where if you hit on one of these younger guys, you can end up keeping them for a long time. And with that, we will wrap up episode 38 of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com, another fantasy baseball only edition of the Extra Bases Podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope your fantasy baseball seasons are going well thus far. I hope that you learn something from these podcasts. I hope that it helps you in some way, especially if you know you listened to the one last week and maybe you made a move on a guy like Franmil Reyes or somebody like that and were rewarded for that. You know, Hunter Dozier, again, is a guy that I jumped on some deeper leagues and a guy that I would keep an eye on hitting in the middle of that Kansas City lineup. In the meantime, if you haven't downloaded the Yak app, get to the Apple App Store, search Yak or the Yak Podcasting or Yak Network. You'll find the app eventually. Download it if you don't have it. I'm telling you, it's really slick. It's super easy to use. It really makes podcasting on the go really easy, whether you're walking or jogging or in the car or something like that. It's such a great tool to use. For listeners that want to, you know, listen to podcasts while they're on the move and maybe aren't at home where they can pull it up on the computer or something like that. So get to theyak.com /Austin2 and check out all of our great podcast content. We've got, you know, I've seen the Diva Chronicles, up to episode 3 of the Diva Chronicles, which includes two awesome athletes talking about training for the Olympics. Like, how cool is that? Like, that kind of insight and perspective that you can have, just, you know, go click on it and listen to them. I mean, that's incredible. That's definitely, I mean, honestly, it's probably way more interesting than the fantasy baseball stuff I just talked about. When you're talking about somebody describing training for the Olympics and the challenges and the sacrifices and things like that. So go check those out, definitely, at theyak.com /Austin. And also check out all of the spring football content. Recruiting content. I've got a basketball podcast that'll be coming out soon. And then, of course, Our normal installments of the Extra Bases podcast, where I'm talking a lot about Texas baseball, maybe some Major League Baseball from like a standings perspective and things like that. So get to theyak.com/Austin, and please, please, please download that app. I'm telling you, it's going to make listening to podcasts a lot easier. So with that, let's wrap this thing up. Good luck to your fantasy baseball teams this week and every week moving forward, unless you're playing me, of course, and take care.